In-depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to the program for Thursday, May 9th, 2013 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. And today in the 3 o'clock hour, as every Thursday at 3, it is Industry Chatter, and my guest today is Paul Strasser. Paul, it is great to see you, and you were here on Industry Chatter, I believe it's been a little bit over a year ago, and since then, you have experienced an interesting transition in your career and your job. Tell me all about it, please.
Thanks a lot, Francis. Pleasure to be here today and be back on the show with you. So the last time we got together, DRC had just acquired HPTI, and so we were in the midst of transformational change for the company. And about 5 months ago, I was put in charge of that organization. So I'm essentially running the High Performance Technologies Group for DRC and really getting in some fascinating projects that we do for some really interesting science and technology missions.
And tell me about some of the things that you do for federal customers. Paul.
A couple of things. For example, we're working with NOAA right now up at the Geophysics Fluids Dynamics Lab. And what we do up there is we actually help the climatologists with their modeling of the climate and having those models run on high-performance computers, which are actually housed down at Oak Ridge National Lab. And so working with the scientists at NOAA, we're actually helping the international community with the whole question around global climate change. Really interesting work. Another area is FDA. We were awarded a $50 million scientific computing award last October, and that has been a really neat adventure for us as we work with FDA in a mission around the regulatory environment. They're regulating essentially 25 cents on every dollar of what Americans spend. So it's a tremendous mission that's exploding, and we're right in the middle of that, helping the scientists with all the research they do in drugs and tobacco and other aspects of their mission.
What's different about the niche that you have in the scientific space that you can do that somebody who would just come in and is a general services provider for the federal government, what edge do you have on them?
Well, it's interesting. It's a unique niche, and it's, you know, I would say it's not like IT where there's just so much to do. We work in computational science and scientific computing. We work with high performance computers. So there, it's really about working the software and optimizing code to run on these high performance computing platforms that essentially are tackling some just tremendous problems. Some are highly data intensive. There's a connection between high-performance computing and big data, and that's where the future is running as we do things like map the human brain, which is the next big adventure on the health side of the business.
Mm-hmm. When you look at those kinds of things, do you see the same trends? You mentioned big data, and that's, of course, a big buzzword in the industry right now. But do you see the same trends that people see in the broader IT services community, or because you're in this special niche, are you kind of isolated from some of the trends and shifts that people experience?
So a couple of things. One is, you know, FDA gets a lot of their funding from their regulatory fees. So in some ways, there's a protection of money there, which is nice when you're a contractor. So that's optimal. But I would say there's a move, particularly at the DOD, which is the biggest user. Over 50% of the R&D funding goes to DOD. And their environment is to try to gain efficiencies and effectiveness, save money by not having to do live field tests. So, for example, you know, instead of trying to drop a bomb or understand how a submarine passes through the water without cavitation, these things now we can do on high performance computers using some very sophisticated models, and that allows us to save a whole bunch of money before we even get to the field tests that are still required. But you can really mitigate the need to do that very expensive activities.
And those. Any cost mitigation you can do is really popular right now, isn't it?
It is. And just a couple examples. I mean, we're working with the Air Mobility Command on the Fuel Efficiency Office. And over the last 2 years, DRC has been directly a part of either cost avoidance or cost savings of $275 million in fuel efficiency for Air Mobility Command. That's just one example. For the Marine Corps, in the area of their air readiness, we were able to save them $100 million and get a greater state of readiness through the application of Lean Six Sigma against their supply chain management problem that they use for the logistics around their aircraft.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the things that you're seeing in supply? I'm sure that's not the only place you're working on supply chain issues. What are some of the things that you see there? Because that's an area that has been problematic for agencies across government, supply chain issues, and seems to, I think, has gotten kind of lost in the shuffle with sequestration and more with less and all these other things that we talk about all the time.
Yeah, I think the most interesting area right now in supply chain is this whole notion around embedded malware. And so we actually have a really important opportunity. We're working with the research and engineering part of the Deputy Assistant Secretary for Defense at the Pentagon, and we're actually involved in program protection, but we're actually also involved in the whole issue around anti-tampering and some of the aspects around secure supply chain management and the equipment that the DoD is procuring. So to me, that's on the edge of the cybersecurity, which we know is a well-funded environment, and so those are some things that are of great interest to us going forward.
Now, the cybersecurity issues, as you mentioned, that it's well documented the challenges that are there. Do you think everybody now gets the seriousness of supply chain integrity? Because it seems for a while people kind of thought, well, this is just the stuff that we buy and it's not that big a deal. But as some of the things that we hear about, especially some of the challenges from nation states and so on, do you get a sense that everybody's on board that this is something that everybody has to pay attention to?
Yeah, I think the challenge and the activities of certain actors, national actors in some cases, they've actually been around a long time. Back about over a decade ago, I was involved with having people protecting the Zipper and Nipper nets, and the threats were present then. They've obviously escalated now. The barrier to entry is lower than, and you could have individuals act as well. But essentially, the threat is, I think, being met very strongly. But like anything, there's measures and there's countermeasures and there's countermeasures. So every time we start to get ahead of the game, there's some countermeasure that comes along. And so we really have to be vigilant. And I think the focus has to be on the personnel, because social engineering and certain techniques are still the most prevalent way that the bad guys get involved in our systems.
I do get a sense that everybody seems to be aware now that this is going to be a ping pong match. There's not going to be a fix or an end point where we say, okay, now we've got this problem nailed and we don't have to worry about it again.
Yeah, I mean, they've tried really hard, with legislation and other things. They've got to tackle that. It's really key going forward. I think there's a lot more sophistication with the stand-up of Cyber Command and some other things. I think the memo and the presidential directives that have designated, the .mil versus the .gov protections, we've seen actually there's increased funding going on at DHS, one of our primary cyber customers. And I think the whole notion around continuous monitoring has really taken off. And we've watched that evolve for some time. And there's obviously a large procurement out right now called CDM, which has a lot of people's interest.
My sense is that the concept of continuous monitoring is something that the agencies wanted some juice behind for a long time, but couldn't get the players on board to do it, and now that there's finally a coalescing of that, it seems like Congress agrees to, regardless of whether they're able to actually get legislation out that defines it and that supports it, everybody seems to agree it's necessary.
Yeah, and I would say, it's interesting listening to the rollout of the president's 2014 budget request. The federal CIO is very focused on, innovate, deliver, and protect, and the whole protect area is all about the things we're doing to try to secure, get ahead of, embed security in everything we're doing, and shore up any of the vulnerabilities that exist today. So it's around all those things. And the focus on the deliver spectrum, I think, is key too, because that has to do with program execution and, tech stat and portfolio stat and these things that are really driving the results through the programs. And some of those results are going to be related to protection.
I want to ask you about tech stat and portfolio stat and how that impacts somebody in your situation when we come back. Paul Strasser of DRC is my guest on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Be back in a moment.
Attention civilian employees of the intelligence community and the Departments of Defense and State. You could be eligible for affordable term life insurance from GEBA, the Government Employees Benefit Association, with coverage issued by Prudential. Learn more about this important benefit for government employees at GEBA.com/term life. That's GEBA.com/term life. Group term life coverage for GEBA is issued by the Prudential Insurance Company of America, 751 Broad Street, Newark, New Jersey, 07102. Contract series 83500.
The Advanced Alliance Solutions Team, led by Technical and Management Resources, Inc., is a GSA Alliance small business contract holder. Here's President and CEO, Linda Carr.
The Advanced Alliance Solutions Team consists of 7 IT firms. Collectively, our core competencies cover all of the functional areas of the Alliance contract and supports agencies' enterprise IT requirements. For potential small business teaming opportunities, please contact us at advancedalliant.com.
To learn more, visit advancedalliant.com.
These days, it seems everyone's talking about the new normal, but federal agencies have a chance to define it. How will you shape your future? Turn to Deloitte. We understand what makes America work and how it can work better. With our private sector insight and public sector experience, we can help you rethink, reduce, and restructure, or even change the game. See how at Deloitte.com/federal. Wherever you need to go, Deloitte sees you there.
MilitaryByOwner.com. When duty calls, they can help.
When my husband got orders to PCS to Jacksonville, we only had 2 months to sell our home near Quantico and find housing near our new base. We were overwhelmed. No, make that panicked. I'm happy to report we've checked into our new duty station, our daughter is enrolled in school, and we're settled into the perfect home that we found on MilitaryByOwner.com.
Military by Owner. Find, sell, or rent housing near any U.S. military base. Homes advertised by homeowners and real estate agents.
Want to cut agency data center costs by 68%? HP ProLiant Gen 8 server blades, powered by the Intel Xeon processor E5 2600 series, solve the problem of costs and complexity with superior efficiencies like unprecedented intelligence that maximizes every hour, watt, and dollar for 64% less operating cost. Intelligent power management that pools and shares power and cooling resources for a 36% reduction in power cost and dramatic reduction of expensive downtime by an average of over 90% compared to hours of yearly downtime with traditional server environments. And only HP Blade System lets you consolidate server, storage, and networking into the same enclosure, simplifying system deployment and management and saving you countless IT hours. The power of HP converged infrastructure is here. To plan your strategy, begin with HP Consulting. Go to hp.com/go/federal for more details. That's hp.com/go/federal.
Tom Temin here with a preview of Friday's Federal Drive. The group Executive Women in Government has forged a new partnership with American University. Their goal, to train young women coming up the ranks. Plus, we'll have expert analysis from ICF International when we discuss the latest White House and OPM gambit to update the government's human capital approach. Those stories and much more tomorrow morning starting at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And for all the latest federal news, be sure to visit federalnewsradio.com.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, federalnewsradio.com. Paul Strasser of DRC Technologies, my guest on Industry Chatter today. And you were talking in the first segment about Portfolio Stat and Tech Stat, and those sessions seem to be, surprisingly to me, popular inside the agencies. I expected that they would not go over really well, but they seem to be working out pretty well. What kind of impact do they have for industry, for people in your shoes who are involved with these in some cases and seeing the results of them and understanding what you have to do to help these agencies get back on track in some cases?
Yeah, it's really interesting. I attended an executive session a few weeks ago with OMB and other executives from both industry and government, and it's really interesting. It was the day before the president's budget was announced. And we were working through the process and trying to make suggestions to make, you know, to continue to improve and roll it out. So it was really, for me, it was fascinating to be a part of what OMB's thinking is on that subject. For us as a provider of services to the government, for example, at VA, we're working on something called Veterans Relationship Management, which is one of the large, portfolio of programs to make it easier for the veterans to receive benefits. And it's been a very very positive influence on the what's going on at VA. And in that case, the VA has their own sort of flavor of TechSTAT, which is called PMAS. And we're directly involved with using PMAS as a tool to help the government review and keep the schedules and the all the deliverable items on track for various work streams, about 20 different systems under the portfolio that we help provide support for. So it directly impacts us to understand that and then be involved in the process by which we keep these projects on track in the case of their deliverables and their schedules. In the case of portfolio stat, it's a whole bunch of things that go into that rationalization, data center, consolidation, and other things. So for us, that's not as close an area as it is in other cases, but TechSTAT, PMAS, those would be two good examples for us.
The only criticism that I've heard, in fact, of those concepts is that they're things that the government should have been doing earlier because private sector companies do those kinds of things on an ongoing basis.
Yeah, we have rigorous processes for, we look at earned value all the time. We look at EACs, estimate at completions on fixed price jobs. We're constantly measuring, earned value and other items to keep us on track to make sure that we're delivering. If you don't deliver, then that's not going to help you grow.
Have those things changed what your customers expect out of you, or the way they expect you to deliver what you deliver? Not the products and services that you deliver, but just the mechanisms that you do.
I think the expectations are a lot higher on the delivery side of the house, and so there is, I would say, more emphasis on that. I believe that today it's very easy in the services market in particular to be difficult to discriminate yourself from the other providers. So, in fact, you have to be really innovative today. And in today's world, innovation cycles dissolve much quicker than they do in the past because they're quickly being adopted by partners, the internet, the collaboration that goes on. So you have to be much quicker, and you have to constantly look for ways to innovate and bring new value to the delivery side of the house.
Does that rest on you, or do the agencies have a role in helping you to understand where they expect to see innovation and what they expect to see?
Yeah, I think it's on us. I've been visiting customers for 30 years, and they always generally like what you're doing for them today. But where they always are looking and searching is for you to help look down the road and look for the risks that they can't see yet. And so the very best consultants in the business are constantly advising and delivering new ideas, looking for technology disruptions and anything we can do to sort of look down the road and advise and be proactive.
Yeah, whenever I talk about that, I think of the old Henry Ford quote, and I can't quote it exactly, but it's to the effect of, if I'd given the customer what he thought he wanted, I would have built him a faster buggy. And it's that kind of thing that I think of people in your shoes trying to apply to the federal business model today to help people understand this is what's possible, given the budget situation that we're in and all of these other constraints, things that seem to be constraints, that there are opportunities here.
Yeah, I think like agile development, I mean, we've been using that on our side for quite a while, and now it's really getting adoption is starting to become more prevalent. So this whole notion of agility, and for us, it involves itself in other areas besides just software development. We're looking at agility in how we do systems engineering and how we do the management of the development projects themselves. So I believe that the whole push and that innovation around agility and trying to deliver in increments quicker and smaller modules and showing progress in a faster sense is both a very big positive and also is going to help the overall missions.
We just have a little bit of time left in this segment, Paul, but I wanted to ask you, are the agencies able to adopt innovation? Are they able to pick up the ball and run with it when you and your peers bring them things? Or are some of these constraints kind of handcuffing them a little bit at being able to really make some of this stuff work for them?
Yeah, I think in a very cost-constrained environment right now, it's a little tougher than it would otherwise be. I mean, generally speaking, a lot of the work that you're doing is in the O&M side of the house. So you've got to be creative and innovative within the notion of operations and maintenance. And then, you know, trying to find white papers and ideas. So we spent a lot of time actually cross-solutioning. We'll take ideas that we're gaining over at NOAA, and then we'll walk them over to FDA, and we'll talk about the scientific computing that the sides are doing. And we'll try to help them bring together shared services, for example.
Are the agencies more receptive to doing that than they've been in the past? I mean, you've been in this business a long time. You know how hard it's been from time to time to get agencies to adopt somebody else's solution.
The short answer is yes. I believe they're much more receptive to looking for ideas, particularly when they can help each other through common good and bringing ideas across and then helping themselves through this notion of shared services and strategic sourcing and other things.
All right. The biggest example of that right now in the federal government's FedRAMP, and you and your company have a big role in that. We'll talk about that when we come back on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Paul Strasser of DRC Technologies, my guest on Industry Chatter today, and we'll be back in a minute.
About energy efficiency? You should. Technology exists now that can save your company a bundle on energy, make your business more competitive and sustainable, and make you look like an efficiency guru. See it live at Experience Efficiency, an interactive event coming to DC in June. Explore innovative new solutions that will change the way we all work, learn, and play. To register for this free event, go to schneider-electric.com.
The secret to being successful is never slowing down. Your agency's mission doesn't have a pause button, and with CenturyLink as your trusted technology partner, you don't have to slow down. Their visionary cloud infrastructure and custom communication solutions are backed by dedicated responsive support. Pause button not included. To learn more about how CenturyLink keeps you up and rolling 24/7, 365, visit CenturyLink.com/gov. That's CenturyLink.com/gov.
This week's Experts in Health topic is Healthy Aging Tips, featuring Dr. Van Zoren, an internal medicine provider with the Mid-Atlantic Permanente Medical Group, who practices at Kaiser Permanente's Capitol Hill Medical Center.
Getting older is a natural part of life. If you take good care of your body and learn positive ways to deal with stress, you can slow down or even prevent problems that often come with aging. Here are a few tips to help you be your best as you get older. One of the most important things you can do for your health is physical activity. This can be anything from gardening to taking a walk to working out at the gym. To protect or improve your memory and mental sharpness, keep your brain active and challenged. For example, attend an educational workshop or learn a new card game. Eat a healthy, balanced diet. A low-salt, low-fat diet with plenty of fruits, vegetables, and fiber can actually reduce your age-related risks of heart disease, diabetes, stroke, osteoporosis, and other chronic diseases.
Dr. Van Zoren was recognized as a super doctor by the Washington Post in 2012. For more information, visit kp.org/midatlantic and click Meet Our Doctors.
At BAE Systems, we always focus on keeping troops safe. One challenge military pilots face, it's called a brownout. When helicopter pilots confront dust storms or fog, the risk of collision is much higher. That's why we created a technology that lets pilots see terrain and obstacles through these conditions. Knowing our work helps to save lives inspires us every day. We'll be there on the next front. That's BAE Systems. That's inspired work. Learn more at baesystems.com/nextfront.
And now the Federal Living Report, brought to you by WEPA.
Federal retirees are the latest victims of sequestration. The Office of Personnel Management says furloughs at the agency could cause further delays when it comes to processing retirement claims. Currently, 36,000 recently retired feds are stuck in a backlog waiting to receive their full benefits. The agency hired more employees and made improvements to its system to cut the backlog in half over the past year, but that number could increase due to the sequestration furloughs and a surge in unexpected retirements.
The current sequestration and furloughs are just the latest in a series of financial challenges that have faced federal employees over the years. Fortunately, for the past seven decades, WEPA, a nonprofit association, has been protecting civilian federal employees and their families with life insurance that is significantly less expensive than FEGLI. Visit WAEPA.org to see how much you can save, and also learn about WEPA's premium refund and college scholarship programs. Again, that's WAEPA.org.
Sequestration is here, and federal leaders are facing a perfect storm of public scrutiny, increased pressure to perform and reduced budgets, and excellence in government on May 13th and 14th. They will convene federal leaders, managers, and government performance stakeholders at this free educational event to learn the key tactics needed to succeed in today's environment. Join federal colleagues May 13th and 14th in Washington, D.C. to get the ideas you need now to drive high-performance government. Learn more at excellenceingov.com.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, Federal News Radio and federalnewsradio.com.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Paul Strasser of DRS Technologies, my guest on Industry Chatter today. We've talked about shared services, Paul, and FedRAMP is a terrific example of that. The do-it-once, use-many-times model that Steve Van Roekel and others at OMB have been pushing, and the General Services Administration is running the FedRAMP program. Tell me about your company's involvement there, what you're doing, and what you're seeing throughout this process.
So we're involved in FedRAMP. Probably the most notable area is on the 3PAO side. So we're a third-party assessment organization, and we've been in the middle of that. And for us, it was transformational because instead of working directly for the government around cybersecurity and the FedRAMP program, we're actually working with the cloud solution providers on their side. So we've had the distinct pleasure to work with a lot of the commercial companies that are trying to bring these solutions to the government. And while it was a little slow at first, things have picked up a little bit on that side, and we're starting to see, you know, some of those organizations working their way through the joint authorization board and through that process. So it's really been interesting for us. I can't actually talk because it's really commercial contracting about which companies we're working for.
Sure.
But needless to say, we're working with some household names, mm-hmm. Helping them with their solutions.
When companies come to you, no matter what their size, I talked to Dave McClure not too long ago on the program, and he talked about some of the challenges that you and your colleagues in the 3PO ranks are running up against with the companies that are coming into the program or want to come into the program. What are you seeing with the folks who, even if it's just an initial, hey, we'd like to maybe give this a try, what are you seeing? Any trends in the way that they prepare themselves to go through the process or anything like that?
Yeah, so there's really two sides. You can work on the remediation the preparation side, and then you can work on the authorization and remediation aspects of it. So usually most of them have decided that they want, you know, two different parties doing each side of that. So we get involved either on the front end or on the back end. What's interesting is the commercial companies in some cases are well prepared with their solutions because they already have a large public practice. In other cases, not so much. And I think the interesting part for us is that we're so used to doing contracting with the federal government, that it's different because it's a little less formal than we experience on the federal government contracting side of the house.
Mm-hmm.
So for us, it's a little different too. The interesting part is it's all fixed price in general. So there's a lot of CLINs, and we get to pick modules like we do on the GSA Risk Management Framework contract, RMF. So there's a lot of fixed price contract CLINs, and then you bundle them together as you provide those services back out and bid on these jobs.
Is it your sense that the FedRAMP model with the 3PAOs and the JAB and all of that, is that a replicable model to apply to other kinds of technology solutions for the government?
Yeah, well, I think it's a great idea. It's like, you know, I feel like slapping myself on the head and saying, geez, why didn't I think of that, you know, myself? But I think it is replicable, but I don't know exactly. I haven't thought of where we could do it elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly this there's applications in probably many other areas. I just haven't spent the time to think about that.
And even if it's not the exact step-by-step process that FedRAMP is using, just the concept seems to be right, exactly the kind of thing that OMB is looking for any number of different things, for somebody to be able to say, all right, now Paul and his team have looked at company XYZ, and this certification here is anybody can buy this that wants to buy it, and here's the price. It's all set up and ready to go.
Yeah, and I think it really helps as we've moved to this everything-as-a-service mm-hmm. model. So certainly as we decide and we continue to push – some of the assets outside the federal government and try to push to a services model, more things will be COTS-based. But there's only so far you can go with that because, you know, on the mission side, it's a little less obvious that you can buy things sort of out of the box. So you have to apply different services model, and maybe there's a multi-service model that'll then lead to solutions that are, you know, more specific to these really unique missions that we get involved with.
Well, that's always my question when we talk about the term everything as a service. And you're not the first person I've heard use that term. But there's got to be something for which the service model or the buy-by-the-drink model doesn't really work the best for the customer. It's probably real good for the contractor, but maybe not great for the customer.
Yeah, I in my own mind, I think back on, you know, commercial off-the-shelf software, and some of the missions are so unique that in a commercial sense, you know, they're not going to sell that out of the box because there wouldn't be a market for it. So I think that you know, I remember way back when, you know, there were people that used to talk that, you know, the low-hanging fruit is the infrastructure and the business systems. And, you know, the more difficult piece and the piece that, you know, is going to come probably much later is the mission-oriented piece. So with that, I think that, you know, there are many challenges moving in there, but maybe that's appropriate. Maybe the mission space, you know, will be using private clouds and they'll have a different set of SLAs. But one of the challenges I think that I hope people are worried about is, so let's say you have some organization that, like FEMA that, has to react to a specific unforecastable event. And then, you know, they're buying something in a service cloud, and all of a sudden there's this surge that they need in services, and whether or not, you know, all the SLAs are in place and that we fully understand sort of the cost models and all the models involved with that. And FEMA's been doing that a long time, so I'm sure they're really good at it. But I just wonder if there are other places where people are thinking ahead mm-hmm. about what does it mean to accelerate these SLAs in those environments.
Well, one of the things that the budget pressures that we're on right now has, one effect of it seems to be, I have people tell me all the time, I don't get to do the strategic high level like that planning thinking that I would like to be able to do because I'm managing from continuing resolution to CR to whatever the crisis du jour is.
Yeah, it's really interesting how the business has changed, let's say, over the last 20 years. I mean, we compress so much buying into such a short season now, and so it's really changed the dynamics of what people do, both on the industry and the public sector side. So I'm fascinated by that, and I wish we could, you know, I think we all wish we could get that sort of straightened out so that it would be more normal and we'd get the most out of what we're doing. But I think it complicates the picture.
There are two schools of thought that I'm hearing, Paul, about what we'll see between now and September 30th. And one school of thought is that in, say, the next 6 weeks to 10 weeks, we're going to see just a flurry of activity now that the CRs are for some agency spending bills are in place and people are starting to understand them, see what's funded and what's not and all of that, that we'll see this huge buildup of business and that will crest and maybe by the middle to end of August, that'll be that for this fiscal year. Then the other school of thought is, no, it's going to be SOP and we're going to see, you know, people taking calls at 11 o'clock at night on September 30th to get the last couple of dollars spent. You weigh in one way or the other there, or does it really matter at this point as long as the money gets obligated?
Yeah, a couple things. At DRC, first of all, the sequester, you know, has not hit us. We're very close to the missions. The work we do is vital. And so we haven't seen a lot of impact there. On the what's coming up, I think we are going to see a busy season. I think right now what I'm seeing, Francis, you know, just in the last few weeks, there has been tremendous amount of RFIs that we've been responding to. And so that's the market research that they're trying to do to get ready for their buying season. It's a little later maybe in the game, but there has been definitely a proliferation over the last few weeks. I believe there is pent-up demand. I believe that there will be a busy season this year, and it'll probably be, you know, probably not much different than it was last year. So we're ready for that. We're getting our resources in place strategically, our proposal consultants. We're making sure we're ready to respond. It's really interesting. The IDIQs give you a whole other nature to the business these days. So we're really responding and getting ready for all those things. We do think it's going to be busy, and we do see evidence that suggests it's going to be as busy as it was last year during this next buying season. I think the other pressure we're seeing is we believe that with everything going on that some of the more experienced government folks are retiring. And so we think there's added pressure for them to actually add more than they would have added otherwise in contract workforce, despite what everybody's trying to work on. And so we think that could happen as well.
You made some interesting comments a couple of minutes ago about the texture of the business and the way you've seen it change. Let's talk about that when we come back. And I also want to talk about something that you're involved with this year that's very near and dear to my heart. So we'll do that when we continue in a minute on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Paul Strasser of DRC Technology is my guest, and we'll be back in a moment.
You're dedicated to your agency's mission. And at Federal News Radio, we're dedicated to making that mission easier. We give you access to the people, policy, and programs that affect you every day from the voices that matter most. Hear for yourself. DoD Deputy CIO Rob Carey.
5 years ago, senior leaders weren't necessarily too terribly concerned about this IT, cyber. Now it is buried in their lexicon. They understand it. They grasp it. They understand its implications.
OMB Controller Danny Werfel.
We create a risk report that tells the agency you have a risk that one of the entities that you're doing business with is actually on this excluded party list and you should investigate further. This is technology that gets the agency smarter, and that can be a real game changer helping us battle the issue of improper payments.
In your car, online, on the go on your mobile device, Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Are you a federal employee or government contractor? FederalNewsRadio.com is the best source for news that helps you do your job better. Our news team brings you the latest on federal pay and benefits, technology, defense, retirement, acquisition, and the federal budget as it's happening. FederalNewsRadio.com gives a voice to the federal community. Read and hear interviews with federal leaders, members of Congress, and industry. Find it all at FederalNewsRadio.com. And while you're there, don't forget to sign up for our breaking news email alerts.
Newsmakers on the Federal Drive.
Charlie Allen, he's a principal of the Chertoff Group and former assistant director of the CIA.
Every day we have tens of thousands of CBP officers, immigration customs enforcement officers at our ports of entry. I think they're doing a pretty darn good job, and the information flows back and forth between intelligence and law enforcement in ways that are unprecedented. I pushed information vigorously down to the fusion centers. Some states have as many as 4 fusion centers.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Paul Strasser of DRC is my guest on Industry Chatter today. And you talked about the texture of the business and the way that you've seen it change in the years that you've been doing it. What's dramatically different now than, let's say, 5 years ago? Use that as a marker when we were kind of still in regular order for budget bills, and that the business functioned, to my observation at least, the way that it had for the recent past. And it's been in that time period that it seems to have changed pretty dramatically. Are there changes for the good in addition to the changes to the bad that we just kind of assume because of the budget situations?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely changes on the good side and on the bad side. For me, the proliferation of IDIQs has tremendously stressed the industry side because, you have to have certain vehicles in order to operate. That adds pressure on your overhead models. So it's kind of an interesting industry dynamic. Sometimes you can go and win all these IDIQs, and if you're not getting work out of those, it's a difficult time. The compressed buying season has obviously impacted a lot of people. I think the thing that's been most distressing for me over the last 5 years, and if there was one thing I could make a difference in my career, it would be to erode the barrier between the private and the public sector. I think we do really good work when we work as a team, and it's always distressing to me in certain environments where there seems to be more of less teamwork and a more of a standoff sort of impression. And over the last 5 years, I think that's gotten a lot worse. I think most people would agree with that statement. And I'd like to see us get back to sort of sitting down and solving these problems together. It still happens, but I think we need to do more of it. I think understanding the requirements and having real discussions around solutions is really a powerful thing to do. And I think we can do all that. Mythbusters was trying to eliminate that, but I'm not sure that we've really gotten to the point where We could have those conversations, and there isn't fear that we're going to do something wrong.
Mythbusters is where I was going to go with that, because it doesn't sound like you think it's had a lot of impact so far.
From my perspective, I haven't seen that it's changed things. We still see, you know, people saying, well, I can't talk about that. You know, it's... You know, we haven't done anything yet. There's no contract action or statement.
If I talk to you, I have to talk to everybody. Right, yeah. Yeah, it's the same stuff.
And I think it's like, because of the pressure on the workforce side. I mean, I think there's a tremendous need for 1102s and the whole contract and procurement community. So I think they're just under a lot of pressure, as we all are. So that's the part I would like to see get better and continue to have, you know, discussions around industry days and draft RFPs. And it's still going on. I think we could do more of it. And I've always said in this business, I've always found that particularly working on the Department of Defense side has always been, it seemed to be more team-oriented than it has on the other side. And it's just an impression. And most of my early career was on the Department of Defense side. So I was very close on some really fun stuff that we did back in the 80s and 90s. And I think maybe it was just because I was further down in the trenches, working some, you know, specific project problems or mission problems.
Mm-hmm. Is that a trend? There are two kinds of trends that I've detected. One is the ebb and flow kind, where things kind of come and go, and the other is either a downward or upward trajectory. This communications issue, do you see it as one or the other, or some other kind of path?
Like everything, I think there's pockets, you know, I think experience is the best teacher there. You know, there's obviously a lot of good things going on. Some of this move to services and the cloud have been really powerful. There's a lot of good that can be done. But if we're starting to, if we get into this LPTA environment and we start buying services and solutions like they're a commodity, I think that can be dangerous. Not that there isn't places where it could be positive, but we just have to be really careful about what we do it and how we do it, and just move to the right place that's the best for the American people, and that's where we got to continue to focus.
The government, I would think, though, makes out better if the more things are commoditized, because they can, at least on paper, at least in appearances, make it look like it's the same thing that I get, so I'm just going to get the cheapest thing. And that seems to be what's leading to this proliferation of LPTAs, is that's where the government wants to go.
I think it's just easier to evaluate and avoid protest in a price competition. Mm. It's a number. It's easy to evaluate. But I think we got to get back to technology as an innovator and as a productivity enhancing tool. We've maybe lost that a little bit. And I think truly, when I look at some of the things we've done, we've saved a whole bunch of money or had cost avoidance in the millions and millions of dollars around this point where we use technology, we use process to get involved. A good example. In the health business, we're helping the Army Medical Command with their ICD-10 conversions from ICD-9. That's the International Catalog of Diseases. So just in the last year, we've saved them $36 million by just helping train and get the remediation around the codes from ICD-9, which is more less codes, to ICD-10, which is more specific. So that really leads into the billing and how the care providers are actually, diagnosing and the codes they select to treat the patients. So there's a whole bunch of really good things that can go on in efficiency to effectiveness and saving money in that way, instead of moving to an environment that's, low price. So we got to keep focusing on that going forward.
The value proposition is at the heart of that. And my sense is, if that's not what the contracting officers want to see, it's going to be really hard for you and your colleagues in industry to make the case for that, at least for the next couple of years. I'm not arguing with you that it's a good or bad idea, that it's the way they should be doing business, but it seems to be hard. That's going to be a hard nut to crack, I think.
Yeah, and I think in times where you're constrained on the budget side, I think, Stephen Van Roekel said it very appropriately. I think it leads to innovation. I think when you have less, you've got to figure out better ways to do things. And so that's where we're focused on the future. We're focused on efficiency and effectiveness, helping achieve the mission, with higher productivity and cost savings. And we're trying to deliver the metrics, the performance metrics that we've been able to do recently, and then show the capability and the way to get there. So we have Lean Six Sigma, we have our internal green and yellow belt training, we have black belts, and we try to get that kind of lean thinking through everything we do and how we deliver.
All right, I mentioned earlier that you're involved with one of my favorite things of the year, and we'll talk about that to wrap up in just a minute with Paul Strasser of DRC and Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. More industry chatter in just a moment.
Event the whole family can enjoy. Carter's Run for Danny Walker is being held on May 19th at Ashburn Elementary School. The 5K run walk includes a family fun fest featuring moon bounces, face painting, food trucks, a performance by the Great Zucchini, and more. This is the second year the Zimmerman family has organized this event in honor of their son Carter. All of the proceeds benefit the Danny Walker Alliance, not-for-profit organization that promotes awareness of this congenital brain malformation. For more information, visit CartersRun.org.
For over a century, Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington have served the youth in our nation's capital. The club's new STEAM initiative uses the arts to teach science, technology, engineering, and math. Today, more than ever, we need your support of STEAM. It will encourage our youth to think rather than memorize, create rather than copy, and to be resourceful rather than reserved. So visit boysandgirlsclubs.org. Send a dollar or more as an investment to help us help our kids pick up STEAM. Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington, great futures start here.
This message is brought to you by GEICO and Federal News Radio.
You might one day carry a wristwatch-sized device for a wide range of do-it-yourself health tests. Cooler still, it might be powered by music. Numerous lab tests can now be done simultaneously on chips the size of a dime. A problem, though, is making small enough pumps and valves to push tiny drops of fluids around. But Mark Burns, a University of Michigan chemical engineer, has a solution. Music.
You can send different air signals or puffs of air by using different notes.
The air pushes fluids through particular channels on the chip depending upon the notes played.
You can essentially just have a little speaker above your chip which will then play the different notes and then the drops will move.
To desired tests potentially ranging from what's in your food to whether you have the flu. For more, go to www.nae.edu/radio. That's www.nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Are you looking to go abroad and make a difference? Consider volunteering or studying abroad on a YFU gap year to Thailand, Romania, or Ghana. Earn course credit, live locally, and become a global citizen. YFU offers gap year as well as summer, semester, and year-long programs to 40 countries. Call 1-800-TEENAGE. Or visit YFUUSA.org to learn more about Youth for Understanding study abroad programs. Change your life. Change the world. Youth for Understanding.
The National Ovarian Cancer Coalition's Northern Virginia chapter invites you to break the silence on ovarian cancer by signing up for the Break the Silence 5K and Teal Mile, scheduled for Saturday, May 18th at Fairfax Corner, Fairfax, Virginia. Race starts at 8:30 a.m. and includes a pre-race pasta dinner at Packet Pickup. Event day Teal Zone Family Fun Area, and a celebration with the Parade of Survivors. Register online at ovarian.org. That's ovarian.org.
This is In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Paul Strasser of DRC Technologies, my guest on the program today. And I'm very happy about one particular job that you've taken on. And that is, you are going to be the industry chair for ELC this year. That's a big deal.
Thanks. Yeah, it's my pleasure to do that. I was vice chair last year working with Ted Davies from Unisys and Casey Coleman from GSA. And so had a front row seat, and we did a lot of good things. And, of course, as you know, we got down there and we had the show ready to go.
That's
and then
right.
Hurricane Sandy came along and sort of changed our world. This year I'm working with Margie Graves from DHS as the government co-chair. Rob Foster from HHS, the CTO and CIO at HHS, is her vice chair. And on my side is Jody Gansermiller from Salient Federal.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're in the middle of – we just released the theme for this year, which is around building a 21st century government and, you know, this move to the explosion of data. You know, you look at what happened at the Boston Marathon, and you look at the explosion of data and how they had to procure this warehouse to try to assimilate all the video and all the digital information they had to try to piece together the crime scene and such. But it's really interesting because everybody that has a cell phone now is a sensor, and they're also the visualizer. So mm-hmm. We're in a world that's exploding around us with technology. It's going to change the missions. It's going to enable the missions. It's going to challenge the missions. And so we're just real excited to be putting that on. And we're looking at that paradigm for real learning objectives. So the people that attend the ELC this year will be able to actually walk away with real information about how they can implement real techniques, process, tools for delivering on the government mission.
Yeah, the analytics piece of the data, the big data explosion, seems to be the thing that people are still scratching their heads about. Collecting it, collating it, people seem to have that part of it down.
I think it's even more than that. I think the real value in big data, DRC has put together their own model. We took the 3 Vs and we went to 6 Vs, and it's a lot more than just the amount of data. But in either case, the real key is not what we know today, it's what we don't know. So I see a world where we're going to have the data coming in, we'll be able to look at it in real time, and we'll look at correlations in real time that we didn't even know existed, the patterns in those correlations, and that's where the technology is enabling us to go. And I think that's going to open a whole new world for mission delivery.
All right. So ELC is going to be at the end of October, and we'll put some details to that at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth so people can find out more about it. And it's great to know that it's in good hands, because as people who know me know, that's one of my favorite places on the face of the earth. I love that conference. And so I'm excited that you and Margie are going to be in charge of it this year, and I'll look forward to seeing you down there. What else on big data should we be paying attention to between now and then, and even beyond then, that maybe agencies haven't had much of a chance to think about yet?
Well, I think we got to get our arms around it. There is an awful lot of aspects to it. I think there's a lot of talk. It's the new buzzword. We really got to get into action. I think agencies need to really figure out how they're going to get there and what they can do in this space. I think there's some good activities already going on. I think healthcare is going to be a tremendous user of it. There's many uses around law enforcement. So many missions will be enabled through the use of big data. I think the challenges are going to be around the convergence of the technologies with the data itself. There's this notion of data scientists and how we're going to involve them. So there's a whole explosion of things that are going on, and I think we have to really set out that roadmap so that we can get there in the right way possible, and I think achieve the end result.
Always great to have you, Paul. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you very much, Francis. My pleasure.
Paul Strasser, DRC, my guest on Industry Chatter. You can find this program archived at federalnewsradio.com.